Hey, it's Amy. I just wanted to get in here before the episode starts and really quickly let you know that 30 minutes in, there's a very minor audio glitch. Basically, some of my audio got deleted and then it's also smushed other parts of my audio together. This only lasts for about a minute or two, so I don't think it really affects the listening that much, but just in case you were worried. So that's really all I had to say. Roll the intro, future Amy.
Science and technology.
Hi, I'm Amy Giacomucci, beloved daughter of Delco.
And I'm Abby Norling-Ruggles, slightly wayward daughter of the Twin Cities.
And this is More Research Required, a podcast where we apply research methods to life's everyday questions.
And design studies that no one will pay us to do.
That's sure right. So today we're talking about, well, this is sort of a question I brought up, as Abby pointed out earlier, on a take that is now gone. This might be our first episode that is going to maybe go anywhere, like go into our friends' ears. So we're still a little new at this, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that... you know, the Hunger Dames, it does exist and may one day see the light of day, but we'll see how it goes. So anyway, you asked this question, where did this come from?
Oh, I think that this was just a shower thought, honestly. I was just thinking between the questions about, like, what does garnier fructis even mean? And, like, does lather, rinse, and repeat actually help? I ended up thinking about my family and sort of the generations that I know of. So I currently live in the suburbs. My parents also grew up in the suburbs. My grandparents lived in Philadelphia, and my great-grandparents mostly came here from other countries, but as I know, they were pretty rural. But the thing is, right now, I'm almost definitely going to move into a city. And I was just, that made me wonder, do generations vary back and forth between whether they live in the suburbs or in the city, or in some cases in like a rural area? Like, is there a natural pattern going back and forth between those two types of area?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really interesting question, and it sort of ties into a lot of like what makes people move to the suburbs, what makes people decide to live in the city. And you know, I think there's a lot of stuff tied up with that question and those types of questions. I do want to say right off the bat that you know, the suburbs that we have in the US today are pretty unique to America, as far as I know. And we don't have any sort of like experience with other types of suburbs. And specifically, I just want to get this out there so it's like on the table and we know what we're talking about. American suburbs are like really tied up in race and racial politics. And so that like these answers are probably going to be pretty different for people of different racial backgrounds. And so I think that's a really interesting thing to talk about. We should just...
Because I have a like 90% of what I looked up was because I started, I wasn't even thinking of racial bias or racial subtext at all. And then immediately as I was thinking of search terms to look up, I was like, oh yeah, white flight. And that sort of took me down the path.
Right. So yeah, I mean, this is definitely a question that we, or I get that you initially posed without thought to race, but of course the answer is going to be tied up in race. So that's a thing that we should discuss.
Right. Also, but before we do that, you said that I'm very American. I know about American things mostly. So are suburbs different in other countries? Like, what exactly is it? Is this related mostly to the fact that other countries are more racially homogenous in general than the United States, or at least their history of racism tends to be less slave-filled?
I mean, there's certainly major differences in the history of race in other countries, and I'm not an expert on that at all. But mostly what I was thinking of with the uniqueness of American suburbs is actually our highway system and how it's affected the infrastructure of our cities, and just the way that our cities are structured overall. You know, in Western Europe, for example, the cities are much older, the infrastructure is much older, and they don't have the space to expand the way that we have. So I assume that their suburbs look pretty different, but I don't really know about suburbs in other countries.
Right. Okay. Neither do I. So we're pretty much on the same page with that. I got really excited to have a learning moment. I don't know. I think that to start talking about this, I think that first of all, we need to decide exactly what kind of study we're going to hypothetically do with this before we continue on as well, because there are two ways that we could examine this. One of them is, historically, do generations swap back and forth between living in a city and living in the suburbs, which is something that we could like actually answer with like census data and looking things up. But there's also a question of, like, does living in the suburbs itself make you want to move to a city? Like, are you a pop punk kid who just wants to get out of this town? And can you only be a pop punk kid who just wants to get out of this town if you live in a town? And that's a question that we would really have to work on, because there are so many confounding factors that could go into this. Like there are a lot of ways, while I was reading, I was looking into this. There are a lot of ways that just like there is a reinforced, there's reinforcements of the cyclical nature of moving back and forth that are tied in with, again, the economy, race, etc. So
they're definitely different. Those two different approaches, I think that you're correct that those are the main two ways of looking at this question. How you initially phrased it was, do kids who grow up in the suburbs want to live in the suburbs as adults? And that's definitely something that we could look at in terms of broader demographic trends, or in terms of the psychology of, you know, current children, current young adults, whatever. And I do think that the answer probably varies a lot for different generations. I mean, I think that we should keep in mind that our modern conception of the suburbs has really only existed since about the 1950s, or certainly, you could trace it back to, like, when streetcars started to become prominent, but certainly not more than 100 years or so. So I think that, there is a distinction to be made between the modern generations that have actually grown up in the suburbs versus older generations, where basically you were certainly moving in and out of metropolises, but your choices were, urban living or rural living. So I think there's really only been a few generations where growing up in a real modern conception of a suburb has actually been an option. But that certainly starts, I think, before our parents' generation. So there are a few generations there to work with.
That's true. And also something else that kind of was interesting to me was the opposite approach, looking at modernity and towards the future, which is like millennials. So our parents moved out to the suburbs in general because they were looking to start a family in an area that was like, you know, considered safer or like better school districts or something like that. But the thing is, our generation, the millennials, are are sort of, let's think about this real quick. Okay, so they are getting married older. They are having children later they are having fewer children in general. And they are buying real estate far less. So there's this whole thing where, like, the time in our lives that we would naturally be going to the suburbs is happening way later. And by then, maybe you're like already sort of in the city and situated, you know? I don't know
if that
affects anything, but...
That seems like a really good point. Yeah, I mean, especially because I think a lot of the drive to create suburbs in the first place in, or, you know, the sort of modern suburb in the 1950s would be like post-war. It's, you know, the quote-unquote greatest generation, but they're moving out to the suburbs to, you know, give birth to and raise the baby boomers. So they're, you know, it's a big emphasis on like, the war is over, let's start a family, let's have a nuclear family, let's have children and let's raise them in single family homes. So, you know, that was a huge goal, I think, of that generation. And it's very much not a goal of our current generation.
Yeah, I think our current generation is like, maybe I'll be able to own a dog someday, you know?
Like, yeah.
That's your biggest dream.
Right. No, definitely. Our priorities have shifted a little bit due to various factors. So I wanted to bring up something related to this, and I don't know if we really want to try to like cite things that we're talking about, but I looked at a paper by William H. Frey in 1979 where he talked about modeling the decision to move to or from the suburbs in terms
of... I read that too.
That's very exciting. It was a good paper. I liked it a lot. It had lots of math in it.
Yeah, I did not get the math at all, and it was very difficult for me.
I didn't, like, go deep into the math, and I know that, like, on this podcast, we probably can't go, like, super deep into regressions and stuff. It's not, like, really suited to an audio medium, and we might lose some of our audience.
No, but, I believe in your ability to be able to just describe math to any person. Like, just do it like it's a rubber duck, but a rubber duck that is very, very dumb. Just doesn't know anything. Knows less about math than the average living duck.
I really don't know if that would be, like, very entertaining. I'd have, like, I don't even think I could do it. Anyway.
But maybe we can
I'm not
going
to go deep
podcast.
Into the math, but I do want to talk about this paper by William H. Frey, which, I mean, it's, like, several decades out of date at this point, but he was doing... these regression models on, you know, people moving. And that was really cool. And I like that a lot. And he was modeling the decision to move as sort of two separate pieces. One, the decision to leave where you're currently living. And two, the decision of where you're going to go. And so using that model, he was able to sort of distinguish between... factors that quote push you away and factors that pull you to a location. So you know, the stuff that you mentioned at the top of the podcast would be like pulling factors, like, you know, suburbs are nice neighborhoods, they have good school districts, you know, you can own a single family home. But then there's also the pushing factors of like, is it a crime-ridden area, you know, are like bad schools, or the classic white flight of there are too many non-white people coming into this neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So and, I think oh, that yeah
sorry
you
I didn't want to interrupt you, but I read something else that I found interesting and related to this is going to sort of derail what you're saying, so please forgive me, but we're going to jump right back to it, which is just that apparently in modernity, like, cities are also happening to get more and more gentrified, like, at a rate that is higher
than
usual.
definitely an important issue, and I think right that might be part of a, I don't know if you wanted to have, if you had more that you wanted to say on that. But that might be part of, I think, a general trend of just like, you know, in the 50s, the 60s, the cities were just, you know, they were supposed to be horrible, crime ridden. Everyone wanted to own their own home and live in these like clean, pretty suburbs. And now I think that might actually just be a flip, not in a specific generation's priorities, but just like in all of society's priorities that like, oh, the cities are nice now, let's go to the cities. The suburbs are, like, gross and boring. And sure, that's partially a reflection of, like, age, but I also think, well, I don't know, I can't really necessarily speak on how everyone feels because I'm very much a city kid raised in the city. My parents like the city and would never want to live in the suburbs. So I don't know how other non-city adults feel.
As, again, a child of Delaware County, the land of every kind of suburb that there is in one convenient package, I went to high school there. And again, I know I'm bringing up the pop punk genre a lot, but
it is relevant to this conversation.
Yeah, we all just wanted to get out of this town, you know? Like, Fall Out Boy really got us, like, oh gosh, there's one Philadelphian pop punk band, and I forget what their name is, and I feel like they love Wawa, so I feel like I need to bring them up, but I can't remember what they're called. But basically, to reinforce what you're saying, I don't think I know anyone who actually truly wanted to stay in Delaware County. I knew people who truly definitely wanted to stay in Philadelphia, the city near Delaware County. And I knew a lot of
people. And by Philadelphia, do you mean the metro area or
Philadelphia specifically?
Yeah. So people who grew up in Philadelphia and wanted to stay there, or people from Delco who wanted to live in the city of Philadelphia?
People from Delco who wanted to live in the city of Philadelphia.
Okay, right. So that's certainly staying in your hometown in one respect, but it is also sort of, you know, moving from the suburb to the city.
Right. And like, when you move from the city to the suburbs, you don't usually move to a suburb in the, I don't know, from New York City to, I don't know, some suburb in Kansas, you know? You normally move to a suburb of New York or Jersey.
Right, because probably most of the time you're not completely restarting your life. You're just moving houses, and you're probably keeping the same job and whatever, if you have a job at the time of your move.
And I think that there are a lot of kids who want to move to the city who do want to move, like drop what they're doing and move to New York or LA or some other place that's very far from them. But I think that still moving to a nearby city doesn't invalidate the fact that it's city living. Although it would
be. Yeah, definitely.
Maybe it would be interesting to see, like, if there are kinds of suburbs where more people want to move to cities far from them. Like,
I definitely think that that's an interesting question. I think it might be slightly outside the scope of this podcast because we already
raised a lot of questions. yeah, we don't have that ability.
But yeah, I do think an important thing to discuss with regard to the study that we're designing here is, are we talking about kids who are, you know, moving out, striking out the first time, or like, you know, our current sort of, we're millennial young adults, where are we going to live for our first apartment or whatever? Or are we talking about more of like the whole long scope? Because, I mean, I will say again that I personally never want to live in a suburb, but I could certainly see people who had grown up in the city or the suburbs saying, okay, as a youth, you know, getting out there, I want to live in the city, I want to live where things are happening, but then when I'm a little bit older and I'm looking to start a family and have kids, I want to live, you know, in a safer neighborhood, I want to be able to get a bigger house, whatever the cause is, and then they maybe move to the suburbs later in life.
Yeah, I think that that's a pretty good question. And I also want to say it's not just cities and suburbs. Like, look at all the city kids who are super into Stardew Valley and are super ready to, like, move out to a farm and, like, do a few years of woofing or something.
But, I don't know if liking Stardew Valley actually correlates to wanting to live in rural areas.
Abby, please, I just want a sheep so much. I just want to, like, sell my cheeses.
You know, like, you certainly can live in a city and, like, raise chickens and stuff.
Raise your chickens in a city. They'll be terrified.
No, the people, when I was a little kid, like, prior to fifth grade or whatever, we lived in a house in the city. And, like, you know, I mean, it wasn't, like, apartments. We had a yard. And the people across the street had chickens. And, like, sometimes they had goats and stuff. It was great.
You can raise goats in a city?
I mean, it might have been kind of illegal, but I think the goats, like, did fine.
Listen, if I'm going to break a law, it's going to be goat laws, because first of all, you cannot legislate a goat. They have the eyes of a demon and they can eat literally anything. Who's going to stop them?
Goats are above the law. They...
this is our livestock discussion podcast. Goat. Okay, I can't think of a good pun, and I was about to do a pun with an expletive in it. No, it's not.
Are we a safe for work podcast? I have no idea if I've been safe for work.
Well, I just didn't want to, like, I don't want to. What if a goat listens to it? They're just kids.
Okay. Hey. Okay. You want me back.
So, what we were talking about before I started thinking about goats at what point are we deciding is the point of test for do generations move back and forth? And for me, I'm thinking that maybe we should do when you are in, like, I think it would be really cool to do a longitudinal study where we ask teens as teens and then teens as, like, later in life adults. That's pretty impractical. This is a hypothetical study, but, like,
yeah, I think we're saying that we have unlimited money in this. Like,
that's true. You know,
I think we're limited to, like, real research methods, like the sword baby study where you just raise children in complete isolation with swords is out because that's highly unethical, and there's no amount of money that will actually get you just children to do above board research.
Don't spoil Kelly's guest episode.
Okay, we'll save that for the Guestbert episode. But I think that in our hypotheticals we can certainly assume that if there's some amount of funding that would get us a resource, we can have that. So okay. I think that it is valid to design a study where we have a select group of teens that we follow for decades or whatever.
Excellent. Okay,
but
so
I do want to, so you can outline that. I do have a counter proposal of a possible study, which would be a lot cheaper, but that's not why I like it. Anyway, you go with your longitudinal teen study.
Okay. Wow. I haven't really thought this out entirely, but I think it would give us, like, if we were to ask to people as teens where they see themselves living at the age of, say, like, 35 or 40, and then ask them again at the age of 35 or 40 where they're living and their degree of satisfaction with their lives, I think that would answer an interesting question of, like, do people live where they end up living, or do people end up living where they want to live as teens? I think that the answers being different in suburbs and cities and maybe rural areas would be valuable. We could also ask them if, like, we could look into generational research for their families if necessary. We could, like, ask them about it and ask them to put it down somewhere so that we can look at that as well. I think that I'm trying to answer too many questions at once because I just want to know.
Yeah,
everything.
I mean, I think that is a problem that we're going to regularly run into with this show, is that we just want to know everything about this topic. We don't want to answer the specific question. But I do think that this study would answer the question of, do people raised in suburbs, are they more likely than people raised in cities, to, assuming that you've got a sample group of both suburban kids and city kids, which I am assuming. I think this would answer the question of, are suburban kids more likely to want to live in the city than city kids, or vice versa? And it would also tell you whether they, you know, for your sample, whether they do end up living there, which is, I think those are the main things that we wanted to test. Like, there are lots of other questions that you could answer with this. My counter proposal study would only sort of answer the second one, but what I would like to do as a stats nerd is take, you know, we could get historical census data. There's lots of surveys, really any survey that tracks people's locations, which is most of them, because mostly when you're doing a survey about pretty much anything, you want to know where the people you're talking about are from. We could use that data, and if we could link it between years, we could get a lot of the data that you're getting from your sort of questionnaire track a small sample thing, but we could get it for probably almost the entire population of the US. So my suggestion is that we don't even do our own survey. So this costs zero money if we can get access to the data. not that that should be a consideration for this show. And we just track, you know, ideally, if we could get complete census records up to the present, which you can't because that's a confidentiality violation. But like, hypothetically, if we had complete census records, or we had a similar survey, American Community Survey, maybe, I think that's also confidential. I don't know. If my dad ever listens to this podcast, he's going to like really just tear apart all of my arguments. It's fine. Whatever.
This is a dad-free zone. No dads allowed. This is all kids and millennials and no dads.
Dad, I'm too cool for your like statistically valid methods.
I'm a city girl. You don't understand.
He's also a city kid though. Anyway, so we just get a whole bunch of data of people and their addresses and the demographics of the area they live in, and rather than asking them questions, we just track them from survey to survey. Ideally, they would have some kind of code attached to their name so that we could do that, but otherwise you can just use name and age and stuff and you do pretty well. And just, we can track over the whole course of their life. Do they move to a more populated area? Do they later move back? What are the demographics of the areas that they move? So, like, do they move to a more diverse neighborhood? Do they later in life move to a less diverse neighborhood? Do they move to the suburbs around the time that they have kids? So, you know, we don't answer the question specifically of do they want to live in the city, but I think we can answer that fairly implicitly, because I do think that if you get the entire life of a person and they want to live in the city badly enough, they're probably going to move there at some point in their life. So I think that this can give us a much more complete answer of the entire population.
I really like that, first of all, because it means not talking to anyone ever.
Oh no, is social anxiety going to be like an issue in these studies that we design in fiction?
Yeah, it's going to be, I'm just going to be hypothetically talking to one of these people, and I'll say something wrong, and I'll just slam the door on them walk away, and just write down,
and then
like,
they're out of the study forever.
Yeah, so we need pretty big sample sizes. No, but I really like that, because first of all, we could do so much with it. Like, we could look into, like, for example, if you grow up in, like, an area with a lot of well-being. Oh, right. Okay. So while I was looking uh-huh. up things for this, because I'm an adult, while I was doing research for my very cool friend, I got curious about what cities have like the highest sort of well-being, the highest satisfaction. And I found both the best and worst cities. And guess which state has the city with the highest degree of like wellness?
Is it Minnesota?
No.
It's the state I think
of fifth last at all times.
Fifth last?
Yeah, it's the fifth last prominent state in my mind.
Well, I sure don't know what that is.
Okay, yeah, I can see why maybe it would be difficult for you to know what that is. It's a place called Provo Orem, Utah, is the city with the highest degree of well-being in the United States.
I feel like I believe that they have one of the best flags of all time, if we're talking about the same city. I don't know much about them other than their completely amazing flag design.
Wait, tell me about the flag, please.
I might just try to like send you sorry, this is Provo, Utah, right?
Yes. I think it's the Provo Orem like complex, so the entire area from the city of Provo to the city of Orem.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm just going to send you a quick link to the image of the unless you got it, or do you need it?
What did you send it on?
Sent it on Hangouts.
Okay, I'm gonna do that on my computer machine real quick. Can I paint a word picture of it the moment I see it?
Please do. Please
yes,
do.
Yes, excellent. Okay, I need this to load faster because this is very important.
Oh no, I'm sorry about your internet. It's such a good flag though.
Okay, I'm so ready. Oh, here's the link and I'm opening it.
Is it not beautiful? I think it might literally be word art. I'm not totally sure.
Like a bad local insurance company. It's just...
It also features a beautiful rainbow gradient. I think that's important. Plain white background, plain black text, beautiful rainbow gradient.
No, but the text has a shadow. The text has... The
text. It does. I have
and
to admit...
And they thought they couldn't... Like, it's like they probably had a fight over what color to put in. Did the rainbow gradient. And then they looked at it and they went, it's missing something. Rotated it like 30 and thought, this is it. This is what we want.
It's sort of like a beautiful shooting star riding on its rainbow gradient. Sort of like the more you know, you know? Just... Yeah. And so I have to mention that, you know, in the interests of factual accuracy on the show, last I heard about this flag, I think they were in the process of trying to adopt a new one, so it may no longer be the... Yeah, I know. How could they ever abandon this perfection? Yeah, this flag would just fill anyone with joy if it was the flag of their township. I don't know what Provo is.
And insignia for a startup.
They made their startup, like, software or whatever completely on Windows 95. I'm glad that I could share this with you, even though it's largely not relevant to our podcast at all.
No, this is the new image photo for our podcast. At the very least, it's the image photo for our Hunger Games podcast umbrella, The Hunger Games.
Okay, that's very important. It'll well, just say Provo.
That gave me...
Okay, that we should probably get back on topic. I don't how even really remember we? How Provo was relevant to us.
Oh, because... I was talking about how I looked up the cities with the most wellness because I was really excited to talk about how it's just in Utah, the land of something that I literally only think about when someone says the word Mormon or yeah. I think about the Olympics.
Right. No, I mean, I don't really know. Like, I wouldn't consider Provo a bustling metropolis. Like, it's probably a pretty small town, and I don't even know if it would really have suburbs as we think of them. I don't really know what the population of Provo is. I'm making this up.
Yeah. I mean, I also, the one listed as the worst was, like, another complex, the Huntington Ashland podcast, the complex, which, yes, it's that Huntington.
Wait, so that was the worst you said or the best?
It was listed as the worst.
Okay, yeah.
Like the least
I did look up some information about the Huntington metro area a while ago, and right, that's three small cities in three different states, so it's not like a single, you know, metro area around a single city. Also, I just looked up the population of Provo. It's a little more than 100,000, so pretty small. But part of a larger metro area, I'm assuming. So, right. I mean, I'm guessing that, like, with these small, spread-out cities making up a larger metro area, you do have less of, you know, the infrastructure issues that you maybe get in a larger city and the budgeting issues and that type of thing. But
yeah,
I really have no idea.
Wondering, yeah. Oh, so why I brought it up is because I was wondering if living in, say, a Provo, Utah makes you less likely to move to a different place. Because you're living in, like, a wonderful area where everyone apparently is very happy and is very good at graphic design.
So good at graphic design. I mean, I do think that probably, you know, living in a suburb around, you know, like, your New York or your Philadelphia, you know, your life is sort of structured as being, you know, around this city. Like, it's the city to you or whatever. So, you know, you probably think about it more and maybe go there more than you would if you live in just, like, a random small town. So, you know, I do think that it's probably, I mean, I'm sure that you can speak to this more as a person who's actually living and lived in a suburb, which I have never done. But it does seem likely that people who live in suburbs of big cities, especially because they would often then work in that city or something, it would be something that they think about more in terms of a place that they could live without changing their life too much.
That's true. And also there's this thing where, like, there's, if you're in a suburb near a city, there's nothing to do in your suburb. You can maybe go to the city. You can go to the, like, for example, if you don't want to go to the bowling alley because an episode of TLC's hit series Weird Sex was filmed in it once, then you never go to that bowling alley again, and now you're down to watching movies or driving around for 2 hours thinking about the vandalism you could do. So it's sort of like the city is also the only place that you can think of that, like, has stuff to do all the time and for free.
Right. No, I mean, that's definitely, especially as a young person who maybe is not, you know, so much in control of your own schedule or your own transit or your own budget, it does seem like there's a lot more stuff to do in the city.
Yeah. And, like, and you don't really think about the drawbacks of living in the city, I think, also, which are usually, like, crime, I guess. Cost of living, and because those are just, you're young and they're not things you consider, like school districts. You don't have kids, you're like probably 14 years old, so
yeah
and also, like, it's sort of hard to imagine having a cool apartment in the suburbs. Like,
well, there aren't really that many apartments in the suburbs.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I don't know about you, but I don't want to commit to a house, like, immediately after graduating and immediately after moving out of my parents' house.
Yeah, that's, well, a that's lot. A very generational thing. And but that is also why I think there might be a trend, which we would see, which I don't know if we're considering your sort of longitudinal small sample size, but we follow these people type of study. I think that we should maybe check in with them multiple times, sort of see, like, okay, here they are as teens, and here's what they want to do and where they see themselves. Here's where they are as 20-somethings, you know, which is, my guess would be, generally not owning a house anywhere in the suburbs or the city. And then here's where they are in, you know, middle age, and if we continue the study long enough, in old age, and here's where they're living, and here's how they feel about that. 'Cause I do think there probably would be a change over time. In terms of both their attitudes and also just the type of housing that they can afford and that makes sense for their lifestyle.
I agree. And also, that makes me think, if we did hypothetically both of our studies, we could see the difference between intentionality and, like intentionality of where you live and what is affected by outside factors. Because I think that is a huge question here. There's so much going on outside of the world that makes people switch between, like, back and forth between city and suburb. And we've talked about a lot of those things already. So it's hard to sort of say how much you're really not in control of what you're doing, but rather how much of your feelings about where you want to live are affected by external factors that are completely unrelated to where you grew up, except insofar as the direction that you will be pulled.
Right. And that's definitely something that would shift a lot over time, because you have, like, you know, major white flight out of, like, Detroit a few decades ago because, you know, of sort of the quote unquote push factors of, you know, racial issues and infrastructure issues. But then, you know, currently, I think there is a lot of interest in living in cities, and cities are gentrifying like crazy, which is not great for the people who have been living there all along, but does make them more probably palatable to higher income people. And we're mostly talking here about people with the, you know, income level where they can, you know, make choices based on where they want to live rather than what's affordable.
Oh, right. Definitely. Yeah, that should be.
And that's right. That's a thing that your study could definitely. I mean, both of our studies could capture this.
Yeah. Sorry, roommate person. But yeah. And again, so I think a side by side would be really interesting to bring up. just to sort of look at whether or not intentionality has to do with it, or if it's like whether or not it's like wanting to get out of this town versus the factors of just sort of being pushed and pulled by the economy and just things that happen because of it.
Yeah, so I don't know. Do we need to like wrap this up? Do we need to pick one study and sort of summarize that, or how should we do it?
I think that maybe we do a quick summary. So for me, I would find a random sample of American teens from a lot of different kinds of areas. So like a lot of different kinds of cities, a lot of different types of suburbs, a lot of different types of rural areas and rural lifestyles. Ask them what their opinions are about where they live, what their opinions are about where they intend to live in the future. Perhaps checking in with them, say, every 5 years? What do you think? Five?
That'd be good, yeah. Yeah. I think, right, okay. You don't necessarily need to go much finer than that. I don't think you would catch a lot of extra detail going, you know, on a smaller scale. And obviously, if budget is not a concern, you know, there's no reason to zoom out.
Yeah, because obviously we're going to be getting so much funding.
Infinite funding. That's the deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we could, and I mean, also we would look for, we would ask them, like, do you know about where your family lived, etc. But this would really mostly be looking at how psychological factors, or how where you live can be a psychological factor in where you choose to live in the future.
Yeah, sounds good. And so I guess my sort of counter proposal, which I will also just lay out, is take pretty much all the data that you can get from, you know, national surveys, probably government surveys, about pretty much everyone in the country, and link those surveys with each other as much as you can, so that you can, this would probably be on a 5 or 10 year basis as well. See where people move, track moves from the city to the suburbs and vice versa, and then see, maybe do some regressions or whatever, you know, not to get too much into the statistics, but find the moves between the cities and suburbs, and then compare those to the, you know, the shifting demographics of given cities or suburbs, the shifting like income levels. You could also compare it to, if you have, you know, household level data, the birth of children, that type of thing. And so we get like, not the psychology of the individual people who are moving, but the broader picture of why are groups of people, you know, such as rich white people, moving from the city to the suburbs and vice versa.
Which is such an elegant way to do that, like such an elegant solution to a problem that sort of requires that, like, and you can find so many answers in there, and you can use that data for anything. I really like yours, and I really want you to do it.
Beautiful thing about the census and everything. Can this just be like a pro census message here? Because I'm a little worried that in our current political climate, bad things could happen to the census. But these beautiful giant surveys that the government does that tell us so much and so much important information about the state of our country and the characteristics of various people and what different groups need and what they're doing. And it's very wonderful and also good for voting records. So support your local census, I guess.
Wait, how do you support your local census?
You don't really, but call your legislator and tell them that you highly approve of the census and they should protect it.
Okay, sounds good. So, Abby, I don't want to throw this question at you again, but I do think that it's fun to answer. Who's going to fund this study for us?
Sorry, you broke up a little. Was that who's going to fund this?
Yeah.
I think this one actually, as long as you frame it more of like, you know, let's look at the overall shifting demographics of this country and what populations in need are dealing with, rather than what's going through the minds of this pop punk generation? You know, I think you frame it right, and you could really get some like actual, you know, research organizations interested in this.
Counterpoint, the band Fall Out Boy.
I like it, you know? I think that's an interesting novel direction to go in, and I think if you pitch it to them, they could very well be interested in.
They can use it to decide whether or not they should keep writing songs about, you know, burning this city down just to show you the light, etc.
Well, you don't think that appeals? I mean, I think, you know, I guess, I mean, is this why I like hip hop and you've got the pop punk thing going? Now, I don't know that you still have the pop punk thing going, but you know,
I think major difference will between always us? Be like, I think pop punk will always welcome those who need it, but it was
including
a very
funding
dark...
their studies.
Yes, of
about
course.
Why we they love also pop get... punk.
Actually, we could get the entire roster of the 2008 Warped Tour lineup to do it. Probably.
Wow. What
the All American Rejects. I forget who else was there. I think the Pretty Reckless were there. I fell asleep.
I really couldn't tell you, honestly. But I'm going to entrust the job of pitching this study to various pop punk bands to you. I think that you're the woman for that job.
Thank you so much. I'm going to do you proud.
Sounds great.
All right, so is there anything that we should talk about before we wrap up, or do you think we're good?
That's all that I have. We could hypothetically do news or something, except this still isn't a real podcast, so no, we can't.
Yeah, I think that research news would be really cool once we actually start putting up episodes as we record them, but if we did that right now, we'd be like, you know, the equivalent of being like, did you hear that NASA looked at space recently? And it's like 2 months
from
now.
They sure did look at space, though. It was pretty great.
I know. And also, the star is an ultra-cool dwarf, which is like just a great combo of words, regardless of how much you understand astronomy.
Someone raised the point that it's maybe reminiscent of Merle Highchurch, which I hadn't even thought of because it's a star, but
Merle Highchurch is a nerd dad.
He's an ultra cool dwarf.
I imagine him wearing like camo cargo shorts at all times.
No, that's a Magnus look. He's got the what, jodhpurs?
Oh, right. You know what? You're right. I did conflate the two, and that was wrong of me, and I apologize.
Anyway, now that we've started our Adventure Zone fan cast.
Yeah, we're doing this real good. We're very good at not talking about the McElroys for 18 hours.
So great.
Yeah. So anyway, now that we've started a new fan cast, I think that we made a really cool, neat set of studies. I'm really interested in Fall Out Boy and or the United States funding them and helping us out here. And
sounds great. So how do we wrap this show up?
Hi, this is Amy and Abby coming at you from the future.
We just wanted to let you know that our music is Marie Curie by the Crips off the album Discover Science.
We also wanted to let you know that you can follow us now because we have a Tumblr and a Twitter. The Tumblr is More Research Required at tumblr.com, created by Abby. Thank you so much for your sacrifice.
Well, and the Twitter is moreresearch_, which was created by Amy. Thank you for your hard work in creating a Twitter.
It took a lot. I really appreciate getting recognized. And we also have an email, so if you want to shoot us any questions or just say hi, you can hit us up at moreresearchcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening.
Bye. Well, until next time, take your graphic design classes from Provo, Utah, and stay curious. Radiation on the brain, as for radio.
them and give them bad names.